you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
And a happy Monday to you. We come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments and closing costs online in real time? Well, Rocket can. Hey, thanks for being with us, everybody. Good morning. We're happy to be here. Coming up 1 hour from now, Dan Dockich is going to join us. He's an Indy sports talk radio host. And so we'll get his thoughts on the Carson Wentz deal for the Indianapolis Colts. And also his thoughts on March Madness is next week on this date next week. On Monday of next week, it's already going to be March number one. And so college basketball's tournament is back. We will have a tournament for the first time in 2 years. Brackets to fill out, which is great. So we'll talk to Dan Dockich, who's a college basketball analyst, about that as well, coming up an hour from now. Also next hour, Randy Mueller's going to join us, former NFL Executive of the Year, former NFL GM. About the future of Deshaun Watson and the trades that have already happened. Carson Wentz, the Jared Goff, Matthew Stafford deal, and other things swirling around the NFL's offseason. But first, let's talk about Dak Prescott in Dallas. We had Drew Pearson, who was recently elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame just a couple weeks ago before the Super Bowl. Great Cowboys wide receiver of the 70s and 80s, a member of the Cowboys Ring of Honor, was the team's all-time leading receiver when he retired, and Drew Pearson was the only member of the 1970s all-decade team on the first team that wasn't in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So a long time coming for Drew. I had asked him about this year's Cowboys team, and on Friday I asked him about Dak Prescott and whether the time is now for Jerry Jones to sign Dak to a big long-term deal instead of going back into this season, coming off the injury, with another franchise tag. Here's what Drew Pearson said.
I think they should pay Dak. I think they'll bring him back, and I think Jerry understands what he has in Dak. I think Jerry is one of Dak's biggest fans. That's why it's mystifying, and everybody around here is scratching their head as to why, you know, he hasn't signed Dak to a long-term contract. But now you see what happened to Carson Wentz up in Philadelphia going to Indianapolis and, you know, the big contract they gave him, and he didn't hold up to it. Look at Goff out in L.A., gave him the big contract, and he didn't live up to it. And even Matthew Stafford up in Detroit, he got the big money in the long extended year contract, and, you know, he didn't have much success either. So maybe that's making Jerry a little gun-shy in this situation, but, hey, where do you go if you don't sign Dak? And if you let him go, especially if you let him play under the franchise tag this season and you don't sign him anywhere along the line to a long-term contract, Dak ain't going to be here after that. The man has a lot of pride, and he sees what's going on. He wants to be quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. It is a big deal.
So that was pretty strong words and interesting stuff from Drew Pearson on Friday. This quote picked up some traction across the sports media, picked up by some websites, talked about a number of places, and understandably so. That's one of the greats in franchise history saying, if you franchise Dak again, he's not coming back. He's got pride. He wants to be taken care of, and if you do him like that, he's not coming back after that franchise tag. And I thought it was also interesting that Drew said, you know, he's got a lot of impact and influence on the locker room. And so doing something like that to Dak sends a bad message to the locker room as well, that you're kind of jerking around the franchise QB. Here's the thing. I can't say honestly whether Dak's going to be Dak after this ankle injury. The ankle injury was gruesome. Took him out for 3/4 of the year. He's a mobile guy. So much of his success happens because he's mobile. He's hard to bring down. He makes plays with his legs. He's great on the run. He's great running the RPO. You know, Dak's legs and his mobility are such a huge part of his success. So I don't know. But Jerry was jerking around with this before the injury. You know, that's not the only reason that Jerry's been slow to give him this money. And so that's the part I don't understand. What Jerry says is not consistent with what he's doing. Jerry keeps talking about, we like Dak. We want him to be a Cowboy for life. We don't worry about the injury. He'll be back just as good as ever. And yet they're dragging their feet on getting this deal done. And if you're Jerry Jones and you're the Dallas Cowboys and you have spent all of this money on all of these other contract extensions, it seems ridiculous not to do it for Dak Prescott. An example. Zeke got his cash. Now, who's more valuable to your franchise? Dak Prescott or Ezekiel Elliott? A franchise quarterback or a running back? We all know the answer to this. You don't have to re-sign the running back because even though Zeke was drafted very high, there's productive running backs all over the NFL that are drafted very low, much lower than Zeke. Finding a productive running back like Ezekiel Elliott, well, Elliott is clearly an elite running back, is not nearly as difficult as finding the next replacement for Dak Prescott at quarterback. So in terms of the importance of getting these guys under contract, in terms of the importance for the long-term stability of the team's success, it's Dak with a bullet. And then it's Zeke well under him. Well under. And if you have to put a haircut toward the contract of Zeke to give Dak more, well, then you do that. And I know that Zeke already got paid, and this is where I wonder if they painted themselves into a corner. In terms of the value to this franchise, Dak is three or four steps above Zeke. And I'm not saying that Zeke doesn't have a value here, because, of course, if you could run the football effectively, it helps out your quarterback, it helps out your defense. We've seen just this year what Leonard Fournette, what Donald Jones meant to the Buccaneers. We saw the impact of those guys on the Bucs offense, on Tom Brady, on the defense, etc. But look how they acquired those guys. They're not breaking the bank for Leonard Fournette, who nobody wanted. They're not breaking the bank for Donald Jones. This wasn't a top five draft pick that you had to give crazy money. Look at the Kansas City Chiefs. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, chosen number 32 overall on a rookie deal. They won't break the bank for him if they even re-sign him. And Damian Williams, who was as valuable as Patrick Mahomes arguably last year in the Super Bowl. Again, you're not breaking the bank on these guys. These were the final two teams in the league this year. Look at the final four. Aaron Jones, really good for the Packers. And when they got him back healthy, gave them a new dynamic level to their offense. But you think if they let Jones walk, they couldn't find an effective running back to play alongside Aaron Rodgers? The Buffalo Bills barely even wanted to run the football. Couldn't be bothered to run the football. Made it to the AFC Championship game. Those are your final four teams. You're not talking about any teams that are investing big money in their running backs. None of them. They're not investing high round draft picks. They're not investing a lot of money. None of them. Your best teams in football invest in the quarterbacks. Look at the final four. Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen. The Browns are really good running the football this year. Kareem Hunt, obviously. Nick Chubb, obviously. Really good. But you can find the Kareem Hunts because he was a cast-off from the Chiefs. The Chiefs barely missed a beat without him, won a Super Bowl without him. And for as good as Chubb is, again, you're not paying him as a top three running back in the NFL. This is the new NFL. And so for the Cowboys to have gone that far to re-sign Zeke and to be playing games with Dak is silly. It is silliness. And I think Drew Pearson's right. And Drew would know, I think, more than most of us would about the mentality of Dak Prescott and his influence inside that locker room. But I think he's right. That Dak is a proud guy. And Dak feels like he has earned being paid a lot more than a fourth round draft pick would. And the injury happened at an inopportune time. But that Dak, like he is seeing the other money thrown around on both defense and offense around the Cowboys, it's his time now. And it just is weird that Jerry has fought tooth and nail against Dak while giving everybody else the contract extensions at far lesser positions of importance than quarterback. And I don't think it's going to come to a franchise tag. I don't. I think ultimately this thing gets done this offseason. I don't think we go into the year with him on this franchise tag. But I will say that it is bizarre that we're even having that discussion because Jerry keeps saying it won't happen. And Jerry keeps saying he wants Dak to be a Cowboy for life. And Jerry keeps saying all of the things that would suggest that it's going to be fine. But if the Cowboys do end up with a second franchise tag on Dak, it's going to be worth $38 million this year. And he's likely to walk after that because of hurt feelings and because of distrust and because of a bad negotiation. And that seems completely avoidable. Completely. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Twitter, hit me up, DA on CBS. Francisco tweets, in DA, Dak is not elite at all. The media is making him up to be better than he is. Without Zeke, Dak is nothing. I disagree with that. Ezekiel Elliott's a really good player. He's a really good running back, but give me a break. If you had let's just say that Zeke is the third best running back in football. With the 12th best running back in football, Dak is just this effective. With the 20th best running back in football, Dak is really damn effective. With the 40th best running back in football, but let's face it, Dak still makes plays. I just don't think that you can say that Zeke makes this offense or Zeke makes the quarterback. Obviously, it helps. It doesn't make Dak. And I don't think that Dak is a media creation either. I think Dak's a really good quarterback that had a really bad injury at a really bad time. And it made, let's face it, the Cowboys season was on life support, and that was with Dak balling out the first month of the season like he was an MVP. And then, of course, they fell into the total crapper. Look what the team looked like without Dak Prescott last year. And they still had Zeke. And they couldn't win a division that Washington won at 7-9. That tells you a lot. When we come back here on the show, it is time for a Momentous Monday. A feel-good segment of inspiration in sports coming up here next. Plus, we are stunned to a news. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Smiling like Little Mo every morning. It's a Momentous Monday.
Every day can be a better day despite the challenge. All you gotta do is leave it better than you found it. It's gonna get difficult to stand but hold your balance. I just say whatever cause there is no way you're round it.
I just think people should know that if you stay positive, everything will be fine. You just eat, drink, and breathe positive thoughts. That's all you gotta do, and everything will be good.
I love this story. Gave me chills when I read it. So Frank Rothwell is 70 years old, okay? He's a grandfather. And unfortunately, his brother-in-law, Roger, passed away to complications with Alzheimer's. And Alzheimer's is obviously a disease that has affected a lot of Americans and a lot of people around the globe. My uncle passed away because of that as well recently. And so Alzheimer's is, it's brutal. For anybody that has ever had a family member deal with that, they know just how painful all of it is. So Frank Rothwell, 70 years old, said, "I'm raising money for Alzheimer's, okay? This has affected my family. My goal is 1 million pounds, okay? 1 million pounds. So this is about 1.4 million bucks. He wanted to raise the money by inspiring others by rowing across the Atlantic Ocean. Rowing across the Atlantic at 70 years old. He said, "I'd like a challenge." And so he began 18 months of grueling training, okay? So it takes him a year and a half to even train for this. His plan was to start on December 12th in the Canary Islands and finish 3,000 miles away in Antigua a couple of weeks ago. He gets into this boat, and it's an amazing vessel. He sells sponsorships to it as well, and it looks like a giant kayak, okay? It's essentially almost like a space pod kayak thing where he is situated in the cabin, in the port of it, and he's got the two rows, the two oars on either side of him, and he's got the GPS kind of satellite thing helping him get through or direct where he's going to go. But he is rowing this entire boat, and it's kind of bigger than your normal rowboats. That's going to protect him, obviously, in the middle of very difficult seas and give him a cabin also to sleep in that he can sleep. But check this out. The guy ends up accomplishing this on February the 6th. It took him 8 weeks, okay, to do this. 8 grueling weeks to travel 3,000 miles, but he ends up doing it. He says it was a life-changing experience, but he also wants to change other people's lives by helping those affected by dementia and Alzheimer's. He ends up raising more than $1.5 million for research. And he said, "I never actually thought I'd achieve getting that much money." He said, "But crossing the finish line was euphoric and emotional. The challenge was rough seas, huge waves, and missing my wife, Judith. But as exhausting as it was all totally worth it." He said he's received hundreds of messages from people who have witnessed the heartbreak of dementia, and he's proud to have raised such an incredible amount in honor of his brother-in-law. He's 70 years old! 70 and rowed himself from the Canary Islands to Antigua across the Atlantic 3,000 miles. I mean, just staggering. Imagine doing this at any age, let alone 70. I just love this story. I love that cause. This dude is so awesome. Frank Rothwell, you, my friend, are this morning's momentous Monday story. Little Mo would love that story. So cool. Hit me up on the phones at 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227, or on Twitter, DA on CBS. Michael tweets, "DA, maybe Deion Sanders is a genius. No way we're talking about Jackson State football today if it wasn't for this stealing thing." You know, you're not wrong. And there was part of me that wondered, did Deion blow this up knowing that it would grab attention? I mean, of course, he had to have. I can't believe he's just flat out lying that he didn't think it was actually stolen. But how bizarre is this, Bogues, that Deion says, "My stuff was stolen," and immediately and makes a big deal about it during the press conference. And then immediately after the press conference, the school says, no, it wasn't stolen. We've got all the stuff. And then Dion, after that, tweets, they're lying. We got his stuff back. So the whole thing is just, you think Dion was doing this to grab some attention for win number one in his career?
So first question, have you ever been robbed of anything?
My car's been broken into, yeah.
Okay. I mean, weren't you like super like unnecessarily angry after, or like necessarily angry after that? I mean, I had a cell phone taken from my house during a party when I was in high school, and I was pissed. I would have sat down at my first press conference after a football game and been like, I came here to bring all of this attention and all of this notoriety to this school to do a good job. And in our first game, I've got somebody walking into my office and taking stuff away from me. To me, it's a mix of, there's always bad people around, and this one guy or girl decided to take Dion's stuff because they knew it was Dion and knew there'd be stuff in the room to take. And then the school, because it's Jackson State and it's on a smaller level and it's not always in prime time, pun intended, that they didn't handle it well, trying to cover it up that it wasn't a robbery, so that they didn't look bad, and Dion called them on that, and they had to tell the truth. And that's where we are now. Now, I wonder, how mad is he at the school for making him look like a liar or that he was wrong about the situation? Like, I want to see where this goes from now. But no, I just think this has all happened, naturally, so to speak. He was robbed. The story was told badly by the school. And now we know what happened and we move on. But I don't know that there was anything kind of fishy going on, that this was blown out of proportion on purpose or wasn't as being presented to us right now.
So you don't think he's being a little melodramatic about this by making the press conference about this?
Dion, because he's Dion, but I don't think there's an ulterior motive where he's sitting down going, not enough folks are going to talk about me winning my first game 53-0. What should I do here? Let me say this on purpose. I don't know. I don't think that happened. I think he was
upset.
Can
he handle this behind
the scenes,
though? Because
he's
Dion. Why did he have to take to a press conference?
He was just robbed. If I'm going to this place as this conquering hero, I'm giving them, I'm the one that called them Jacksonville State at 6:30, prompting that tweet that you read. So
hey,
I don't even know the difference between Jacksonville State and Jackson State. So he's going there to do all of these great things for the kids, for the school, and he's rewarded at his first game by getting robbed. And only him. It was a targeted robbery. So I don't think that most emotions would have been wrong in that situation. Could he take a deep breath and not embarrass the school? Maybe. But I don't think he said it on purpose to make him look sympathetic or to get more eyes on the game, whatever it may be. I think that was all as natural as it can be when it's surrounding Dion.
So let's people's court this thing together. Let's piece this thing together, okay? So Dion puts his wallet and his cell phone. I don't know why you wouldn't coach with your wallet. That seems kind of weird. But okay, you put your cell phone and your wallet in a Ziploc bag in your desk drawer in your office. And let's just say you lock your office. And then you come back and it's gone. And we assume that Dion's telling the truth here, to where a staffer witnessed the thief. And the thief was a guy, the staffer was a woman, and she couldn't stop him from doing so. So this guy goes, okay, Dion's got some good credit cards. He's got his phone. It's an inside job, apparently. They've got a key to the office or whatever. They get it, and they're still hanging around the facility. They're hanging around the game. They have the wallet of Dion on them. They have Dion's cell phone on them. Dion says this. The staffer that witnessed it says, oh, I saw who stole it. They go and ask that guy who's still in the stadium. And he's like, yeah, you got me. Here's all Dion's stuff. And then Jackson State doesn't want to look embarrassed. So they say, oh, it was just misplaced. Do you think that's what ends up happening here?
Yeah, the one thing that I would ask questions about is to how fast they tracked this guy down and got the stuff back that they didn't tell Dion before he went into the room, the press conference, which maybe would have calmed him down that, okay, I did get robbed, but I have my stuff back, so maybe I can just keep this, secret for now. how he went into the room not knowing that his stuff was found, or if it wasn't found by then, how did they find it, and where was the guy, and who was involved? So, like, that part, there's a little confusion there for me.
Yeah, they basically had it found by the time the press conference is over. Like, immediately after the press conference, the university told Sports Illustrated it's not stolen.
Yeah, it was that it was taken to be put in a safe place, and we forgot to tell Dion about that. But yeah, I think in general, this is what happens when, again, like, you know, the lower scale of what they're dealing with, like PR wise and news wise down there before Dion. I mean, it's FCS. And so now all of a sudden they've got Dion and they've got a robbery and they go, oh my God, what are we going to do? Let's make ourselves look good. And instead they make themselves look terrible, like bungling idiots. And plus insulting their brand new gorgeous head coach by calling him a liar about his stuff being stolen.
This story is great because
he might not coach a second game, D.A. He might go, you know what, I have enough of this. Like, I'm getting robbed, and I got no support from the school. Because don't forget, too, they finally copped to the story after he went back and said, no, they're lying. So, like, he could definitely be annoyed today to be like, you know, I'm not coming back down here. I'm out.
It's so not interesting that an FCS school beat an NAIA school by 53 points yesterday. What is interesting is that Deion Sanders had his stuff robbed, and then the school supposedly lied about it after they found the stuff within 10 minutes of the press conference, and then Deion took to Twitter to take down his bosses. That's the best part about this. Best part about yesterday.
No, and my second favorite part, I love the fact that they played a school called Edward Waters. I need Edward Waters to be in a league with Oral Roberts, Washington and Lee, maybe George Washington University. If your
George
school
Mason.
Is someone's name, you need to play together. Because the fact that they beat Edward Waters, like it was a guy by himself playing an FCS football team, I'm all about that.
They whipped up on Edward. They just took him beyond the woodshed. 53-0. So Bogues has your headline this morning. Where do we begin?
With the Minnesota Timberwolves firing head coach Ryan Saunders after last night's 103-99 loss at the Knicks. That dropped them to 7-24 this season, 43-94 since Saunders replaced Tom Thibodeau back in January of 2019. The change was coming because the T-Wolves will reportedly hire Raptors assistant Chris Finch today as their full-time replacement. Now, multiple NBA players tweeted their disappointment overnight that Minnesota is not promoting associate head coach David Vanderpool, who is black. Finch has a history with GM Gerson Rosas. He's expected, by the way, which is odd too, to keep Vanderpool and the rest of Saunders' staff. And I guess when the T-Wolves made their GM change, they reassessed Saunders, even interviewed this Finch guy then, but kept Saunders. Now they make the change, but it's really sketchy. To fire a guy after a game, let him talk to the reporters afterwards as if he was still going to be the head coach, and then after you fire him after that, the next morning, they're going to hire this guy because the release says, the exact words are escaping me now, but like, we'll tell you who our new coach is tomorrow, meaning today. So they haven't confirmed Chris Finch is the guy, but they told us last night they'd have a new head coach today. So there was a lot of shady backroom dealings here to make this transaction happen all in a couple of hours.
Wow. Jeez, that is bizarre. But only the Timberwolves, they always nail this type of stuff.
The Nets finishing off a 5-0 road trip with a 112-108 win at the Clippers. James Harden scored 37, 28 from Kyrie Irving to negate 63 points combined from Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. The Bucks beat the Kings 128-115. That's two wins after five straight losses. Trae Young had 35 points and 15 assists to lead the Hawks past the Nuggets 123-115. And the Raptors down the Sixers 110-103. That's a four-game win streak for Toronto. The Genesis Invitational is Tiger's tournament, but he can't play this year because of December back surgery. So Tiger, just part of the CBS broadcast yesterday, a quick chat with Jim Nance, who asked him if he'll be ready for the Masters.
Gotta hope so. I got to get there first.
You feel like you'll
be? A lot of space on, you know, my surgeons and my doctors and my therapists and making sure that I do it correctly, and this is the only back I got, so I don't have much more wiggle room left there.
This is the only back I got. Oh. Surgery number five on that back for Tiger. He added that looking at his punt at his putter is the most practice he has done since December. Max Homa won the event, by the way, in a playoff with Tony Finau. The NHL's weekend at Lake Tahoe ended with a lot of offense from the Bruins last night.
As they keep the puck in high slot, Stanika near circle, it's fired, they score! That's a hat trick for David Pastrnak! Somebody throw one here! He's got three, and the Bruins with the extra point lead it 7-3 over the Flyers!
Just a rod on Bruins radio. Boston beat Philly 7-3 behind that hat trick from David Pastrnak. College Hoops, number 21, Wisconsin, a 68-51 win at Northwestern. Christopher Bell won the NASCAR Cup race at Daytona's Road Course, and U.S. Women's Soccer beat Brazil 2-0 in the She Believes Cup in Orlando. And now, we're stunned.
Woo!
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
So if it wasn't for Mraz and Tom Brady's hype video, this would definitely blow your mind. One of my favorite shows on TV right now is To Catch a Smuggler. The things that people try to sneak into the U.S. and the ways they try to sneak it in are really, really good TV. Obviously, drugs are the number one thing that gets snuck into the States. We all know the usual ways, hidden inside objects or inside people. Or maybe you try to make it look like something else. Customs officers in Cincinnati recently caught 44 pounds of cocaine disguised as the frosted part of Frosted Flakes.
Wow!
Yeah, how about that? The shipment was coming from Peru, headed to Hong Kong after its layover in Ohio, but a dog sniffed out the drugs. The cereal was covered in white and gray powder, furthering suspicion. They tested it. It was coke, believed to have a street value of $2.8 million. The story doesn't say how they were going to re-separate the cocaine and the flakes part of the cereal. But either way, that's one hell of a way to wake up, huh? A bowl of cocaine flakes in a bowl?
Part of a wonderfully nutritious day, your coke flakes. It's a glass of orange juice, banana, toast, and cocaine flakes. So my question is 44 pounds of cocaine-coated cornflakes. How much could a box of cornflakes actually weigh? Maybe half a pound or something like that? 12 ounces at most? So this, you have to have like, what, 65 to 70 or 75 boxes of cornflakes that you are shipping? Like, it's not 44 pounds of cocaine in one bag of cornflakes. So you're trying to send 75 boxes, like two crates or cases of cornflakes, to a residential address and think it's just going to get there, no questions asked. That on itself would be weird. Like, why do you want 75 cartons of cornflakes in Hong Kong?
Yeah, Tony the Tiger is great, but you need 44 pounds of this from Peru to Ohio to Hong Kong. I mean, that would be my first tip-off, is this is not a direct route from Peru to Asia. If you're stopping in Cincinnati, something's going on here.
Yeah, exactly. So for some reason, you needed 75 boxes of Peruvian cornflakes. That seems like a tip-off right there. Number two, it goes to show you how good these cocaine or drug-sniffing dogs are, because I'm guessing that they resealed all these boxes with some type of heat gun or glue gun or something like this. So this dog sniffed through plastic, cardboard, boxes, whatever, however this was sealed. You ain't getting anything by these dogs. You know, that's, if you can't hide it within a box of cornflakes, you're toast. How does anything get through these dogs if you can sniff this?
Yeah, the only reason why things get through is because there's not enough agents that they only can, the number is so minuscule, the actual number of things that they can check coming into the country. So it's almost bad luck when you get caught, because you almost should get through the screening because they can only look at so many things. So, yeah, when you get the dog near your suitcase, that's, or whatever this was in, that's really bad luck for you as a drug dealer.
And if you are then getting this shipment in, of 44 pounds of cocaine, do you then have to have some type of process to get the cocaine off of the cornflakes? Or are you just taking all the cornflakes out of the bag and hoping that all the cocaine's at the very bottom, you shake that out? And then you have to kind of fine-tune that and sift through that, because you can't sell cocaine with cornflakes.
You can't sell coke flakes. You're right, dude. You can't sell coke flakes. That'd be a tough thing to push. Although, I guess if you need drugs, you'll take them out where you can get them. But, yeah, somebody, it's one thing to put the cocaine on the flakes, but on the end of this trip in Hong Kong, are there people waiting with sifters to just throw the cornflakes on top and shake the coke off into something else?
Yeah.
I mean, that is not a good job either.
No, and if somehow the cocaine is kind of like melted on, like in that glaze, how do you actually extract the cocaine from the cocaine flakes? And then this story also mentioned that in July, police in Italy discovered cocaine stuffed inside individually hollowed out coffee beans. Could you imagine how much time is being spent by drug dealers where you're hollowing out individual coffee beans to get the cocaine in there? That's got to take weeks, months, and then it gets confiscated, all that work for nothing? Boy, that's got to be just devastating. You know, it's like putting in all that work in a Super Bowl, and then you blow the, put all that work in all season long, and then you blow the Super Bowl. It's like, what do we do all that for?
I'm stunned by the person whose unfortunate string of events in their life left them in a position where they had to hollow out a cocoa bean as part of a huge drug cartel to get drugs in a different country. I mean,
like
my
goodness. 1,000 cocoa beans.
Oh, my God.
When we come back here on the DA show, Patrick Mahomes is having a baby, and his wife, his family, him, posted pictures, and I've got some thoughts on them. Uh-oh. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Yeah, you like that, big boy?
I'm gonna do a downer.
Oh, no.
And I don't know why Jay-Z is an entrepreneur, for sports.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Entrepreneur. Hurricane Jen never ceases to amaze. 47 minutes past the hour. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. The best of clips available every single day on YouTube. Watch the show via YouTube. And this week, a brand new Nomad episode is being released.
No.
Yes.
No.
Don't you tell me, Hurricane Jen, what I'm going to do with Nomad. My travel series. Brand new episode coming out this week. Available on YouTube. Just search my name and Nomad, and you can subscribe. 80 plus episodes now of my Nomad travel series. God bless happy couples. God bless the wonder of childbirth. God bless happy, healthy everybody. That's first and foremost. Nothing but love for people that are happy. And it certainly seemed like Brittany and Patrick Mahomes are super happy. They have been high school sweethearts, which is adorable. And Brittany is pregos. And she has been very public about getting engaged and then the pregnancy. She's posted a lot of pictures on social media. Brittany is not shy for attention. And the other day, they released maternity photos. Now, I had not seen this until last night on the couch. The Bourbon Belle points her phone at me and says, "Have you seen these yet?" And I looked at them and I said, "I had not seen those yet." And I just paused and I said, "Hmm." And she said, "You better not say anything mean." And I won't, because I have nothing mean to say here. These maternity photos look like high school prom photos combined with like a Disney princess movie. It's like if your prom, your senior prom, was like Frozen 3, because she is in this very elegant, very layered type of white, off-white dress. He is in a suit, although I will note no socks, just loafers. And they are what appears to be in front of like a hanging, billowy blue curtain with a sky background indoors somewhere with perfect professional lighting. And he is on one knee holding her belly. And he's looking lovingly into her eyes. And there's nothing mean for me to say. She looks beautiful. He looks handsome. They're dressed well. The lighting is great. The framing is nice. All of this. But, folks, is this not the best thing ever? And here's what I mean. All of us, male or female, are dragged into things in your relationship that you don't want to do. Everybody. You know, they always say that marriage is basically, you know, a series of compromises. It's like the Constitution, a bundle of compromises, right? Every day you have to kind of balance what you want to do versus what your loved one wants to do. And it just oftentimes will feel like in a marriage that you are being dragged into situations or doing things or whatever decisions that you don't really have much control over. You're just there. And this happens, I'm sure, to a lot of guys a lot of the time. It feels like wives will just tell you, this is what's going to happen. And isn't it great, folks, that Patrick Mahomes, who's worth $500 million, is on a fast track to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, who has accomplished everything in his life, could also be put in these situations too? Like, even he doesn't have complete control over his life. And that makes me happy. That Patrick Mahomes, this could not have been his idea. This could not have come from...
He's a big Blue Bunting fan.
This could not be his idea. And he, just like the rest of us schnooks, has got to go along for the ride. So, Patrick, you're going to wear this suit. Got it, honey. We've got this lighting set up. Got it, honey. We're going to do it on this day. Got it, honey. And you're going to be on one knee, and you're going to be looking longingly into my belly button, and we're going to smile, and you're going to love it, and it's going to be beautiful, and we're going to frame it, and it's going to be in our living room. And he, Patrick freaking Mahomes, has to also say, got it. It is great. This is like, this photo is, I mean, top, this is tier A cheese. This is just elite cheese. Elite cheese. He's elite quarterback. This is elite cheese. And he's got to go along for the ride just like the rest of us. And it's just perfect because even his smile, isn't it the cheesiest smile ever? It's very much like Gordon Hayward saying, Daddy's always happy on the gender reveal. Aren't you happy? No. Aren't you happy? Daddy's always happy. Now take the gun away from my head.
Whoa. No,
that's a girl. I felt bad for Gordo in that clip. I don't feel bad for Mahomes here. And you're right, though. It's so cheesy that it almost looks like that's what they're going for.
Yeah.
Like, it almost looks like they want this to be a spoof of, like, some kind of medieval maternity shoot.
It's like Disney High School Musical meets Patrick Mahomes having a baby. It is so tier A cheese. When we come back here on the DA Show, Dan Dockich is going to join us. We'll talk about the Carson Wentz deal and college basketball bracketology next.